Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, can student activism succeed where everything else has failed?
I support the Second Amendment, but for God's sake, how can we knowingly pass bills and laws that are in direct opposition to saving kids' lives?
I've spoken to grief counselors, but grief counselors can only do so much. What we need is action, and we need it now.
They say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS! They say a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. We call BS!
We want change! We want change!
The voices of those students from Stoneman Douglas High School gives you a sense of how the tragedy has transformed them. In the 8 days since 17 people at their high school were gunned down, the students have organized rallies. They've confronted legislators in Tallahassee about gun laws. They've made dozens of media appearances. They were on that CNN town hall last night, and they've begun to plan a national march in Washington next month. They're stepping in, they say, where adults have failed. Here's high school student Cameron Caskey.
The adults in office have let us down, absolutely. And fortunately, we have a lot of support from the older generations here. But what we're trying to do here at March for Our Lives is say the adult politicians have been playing around while my generation has been losing our lives.
Can Cameron and his fellow students force change on gun policy in a way that's eluded so many other committed activists? And if they can succeed on gun laws, can younger activists make change in other places where there has also been political paralysis? So those are our questions this morning. And as our guests join us, I'd like to hear from you. If you're in your teens or 20s and working on a cause, are you seeing some real results? How are you being inspired by what you're seeing going on in Florida? Maybe it's raising awareness about environmental degradation. Maybe it's a cause around criminal justice. Maybe you are indeed working on this gun issue. Do you agree with Cameron Caskey there that adults in office have left you down? So if you're a millennial activist, I'd like to hear about your experience and what this moment means to you and whether you agree that adults haven't gotten it done. It's time for you to step up. 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Our guest today, James Farnsworth, is a sophomore at the U of M. He's raising money to send students to the March for Our Lives in Washington, and he's with us from Minneapolis. And James, welcome. It's really good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Carrie. It's great to be here.
Amy Allison is with us. She's the president of Democracy in Color, and she's with us today from Berkeley, California. Amy, welcome back to the show. Really good to have your voice on this.
Thanks for having me on.
Hey, I thought I would take a call here real quick from Katie in Collegeville. Katie, you've responded quickly to my questions, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about this. Hi.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for taking my call. So I got involved in political activism in 2016 during the primaries, especially concerned with what I was seeing on the right in terms of the party sort of being taken over by alt-right activists. One thing that I've been sort of disappointed to see, though, since then is that I'm not seeing young people showing up at formal political events like the caucuses most recently. I was the only young person there, and I'm hearing some of my friends being very excited about going to march and things like that, but I'm concerned that that won't necessarily translate into concrete results in government.
This is such a good point here, because it's, do you work the levers of government, or do a lot of the younger activists feel like they have to go around government to get things done? James, I'm going to put that to you. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, just, you know, recently with the caucuses just happening in Minnesota, me and my peers, you know, there was some talk amongst us about who's going to caucus, who's going to participate. And a lot of people felt that the caucus system and getting involved, you know, at the conventions and as a delegate and kind of navigating that process, a lot of fellow college students felt that that was really inaccessible, just due to lack of knowledge of the process. You know, some people had night classes, some people have other commitments. So there was that concern there and kind of that, you know, conflict of, do we, you know, express our activism and express our passion in one way, or do we, you know, do it within existing systems? So I think it's really a systems question. It's actually kind of fascinating to see people grapple with that as, you know, the political process play out and people navigate their activism.
Agreed. Amy, that's also the question when you look at polling numbers among millennials about trust in government. There's low levels of trust in government. I don't blame them. They've seen a lot of political paralysis. But how do you think about this idea of being active and being committed to a cause, but also the reality that some of the change has to happen through government?
I think one of the most remarkable things we've seen in the last week is not only just a call for moral urgency, but the honesty of the voices. These activists don't care about party, don't talk to us about party. And in fact, the reality is a large percentage of that generation isn't even registering with a party. So that doesn't even, they're just calling BS. Like we saw the young woman give that speech a few days ago, I call BS, basically saying all of the arguments that people give for not solving this problem are completely wrong. And in the days since, and including the CNN town hall, just by shaming and calling out the politicians who have lots of reasons are saying, I'm not buying that. I don't accept that. They are actually raising the level of awareness. It's not a matter of can you do it? They could. What the young people are saying is you don't have the will and you're not willing to do it. And just by doing that, they're elevating the discourse and creating the sense that things can happen. All the details about what the policy is, if we start going there now, without an acceptance about like what kind of country we want, we're missing the opportunity to actually push further. And you can see by the Republicans' response, okay, well, maybe we'll raise the level of the AR-15 purchases, or perhaps we should arm teachers or something. But they're not getting to the core issue. And so that's why it's so important that the young people keep pushing the larger moral issue and calling for courage around that.
Yeah, James, what I noted, did you have a chance to watch that CNN town hall last night, a bit of it?
I did. My roommates and I watched it, and I thought it was totally inspiring.
I did, too. And what I thought was interesting was what happened in the room when, as Amy suggests, politicians fell back on the, well, it's complicated, and if we do this, and what the response was from the students. What's your response to that? Well, I think you have to understand, you know, when the politicians say, if we do that, and then there's this, and then there's this, and students were standing up and going, let's begin, right? Let's just do something. What's your thought on that?
Absolutely. I mean, from a 30,000-foot view, I thought it was a great event where everyone came together, politicians, students, parents, community members, around a difficult topic. But at least everyone was there, especially, you know, props to Senator Rubio, who showed up and engaged. But I think you make a great point. A lot of, you know, answers, especially when students were asking Senator Rubio questions, who obviously, you know, his voting record and his political support indicate a certain way of thinking. I thought the students were right on the ball, and I thought it took a lot of courage for them to stand face-to-face with their elected official
it
and
did.
To be persistent in getting answers. And that's why that and for other reasons, I think that this unique moment in student activism, these group of students, I feel a different energy, and I think it's going in a really positive direction.
Call here from Youssef in Burnsville. Hey, Youssef, tell me what your experience is with activism. What are you involved in?
Yeah, I just graduated last year from the University of Minnesota, and we started this movement when I was a sophomore, me and like 15 of my friends. And we just got sick of massive school shootings and public places being attacked. And one day we were just sitting around, jerking around, and we just started talking about, like, how can this stop? And one of my friends was like, hey, politicians do get money from the NRA. And I said, why don't we start a website where we can expose people that are taking massive contribution from the NRA to buy their vote.
Uh-huh.
And I live in the city of Burnsville, and I've been there all my life since I graduated, and I was there with my parents when I was growing up. And like the gentleman who represents us right now in Congress, Mr. Lewis, and who narrowly won the election, and in this upcoming election, we're going to target him very heavily because we figure if we can get a lot of people out in that community to figure out, hey, this guy's not speaking for us, but he's NRA is actually buying his election to do what's right. You know, we figure if we can start, the only way we're gonna inspire change is by getting people voting for people who believe the same thing we believe in.
So what you're doing is making these campaign contributions much more transparent. What's your website address?
You know, our website is our District 191 against gun violence, and we have we don't take no contribution or anything like that. But we actually just exposed, and we have reached to Mr. Lewis. We went from door to door. We have people that didn't vote last year that are actually excited to vote on this upcoming midterm election. And the only way things are going to change is by getting people who believe the same thing we believe in. The Republicans take most of the NRA contributions. And I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. I'm not tied to anybody. I don't trust politicians whatsoever. And politicians nowadays don't care about us. They don't want to do what's right for us. They want to do what's right for corporate and anybody who can give them as much money towards their election or their upcoming election contribution.
Yeah, you know, Yusuf, you've raised something that I wanted to take back to Amy and James. Amy, this, as we were listening and last night at the town hall, did you have a chance to watch it as well?
I did.
Okay.
I was really moved.
So one of the young men who spoke last night is David Hogg, who was, of course, in the school when this happened. And he says, he's told CNN over the last couple of days, if our elected officials are not willing to stand up and say, I'm not going to continue to take money from the NRA because children are dying, they shouldn't be in office. Now, you saw Senator Rubio's response to this, and this is where this gets pretty complicated politically. What did you make of it?
It's a very simple question, and he did not have a simple answer. And I think what those who are really relying on NRA money and who are assuming that we have to continue this gun culture with these kind of mass shootings, they're being held to account. They're not responding to the basic question. I mean, the beauty of directly asking, and this is like a bird dog, the way that these young people directly confronted these Republicans, and I hope they continue doing that in people's homes, districts around the country. If they're asking, are you for violence or are you against violence? That's not getting into all the complex policy stuff. Are you for or are you against it? Are you going to do something? And to not accept a mealy-mouthed or weak response. And so I think, you know, I think the not all these young people may know all the history, or they may all know all the, but they do know that they have dealt with violence. I keep thinking the reason I was so moved as a student like that, just a week ago, had this traumatic experience.
Right.
These are students who have been traumatized by their direct experience. I think about how young they are. I think about young people in the Black Lives Matter movement who were traumatized back in the 60s, who faced fire hoses. I think there's something incredibly powerful about them having this experience. I mean, shoot, if you can remember back to, like, if you had a car accident, you've shaken up for days, imagine what they're going through, because it's such a bigger scale and so traumatic. And yet to have the power to call those politicians out directly on a very basic thing is so courageous and so pure. It is what our politics needs. It's what we all need. And that's what we're looking at them and saying, oh, my God, thank you for calling it what it is and not allowing the politicians to twist it
and
make it more complicated.
Amy, I had the same thought about Jamie Gottman's father, who stood up first to have the clarity
of mind. Yeah. You know how he was trying to be he's like, I want to like you, you know, here, but it is weak. And I kept thinking, look, he's talking so seriously and forcefully. His daughter was just murdered. I just kept thinking the whole time.
James, I know you've been active for some time on gun policy issues. Does this feel differently to you?
I really think it does. I mean, not only, you know, have I worked on gun policy issues, but as a member of student government of the Minnesota Student Association here at the University of Minnesota, we're active in a lot of, you know, issues not that are just focused on the institution, but at the legislature and at the federal level. And I think something about this movement around really stopping gun violence and really acknowledging that another entire community has been rocked by gun violence, and children and students and young people don't deserve to have this keep happening to them. And I think there's just some kind of unique energy. It's hard to put it exactly into words, but there's some kind of energy around what the Parkland students are doing with their, you know, genuine and persistent approach at the legislative level, as well as doing a variety of media and other community engagement efforts. It seems like they are right on the ball. They know exactly where to target, and they are just have a compelling message out of unfortunate circumstances to really impact change. And I think last night's town hall was a fantastic example. Obviously, they're not done yet. They're, you know, organizing the March for Our Lives on in Washington, D.C., which is part of what I'm doing here at the University of Minnesota, mobilizing to send students to that. And we want to be part of that. We want to stand by our peers who are really making this forceful and impactful statement. I think we can all feel it. We can all tell. And we want to be there to support as much as possible.
James, do you have a GoFundMe page, or how are you raising money online through this?
We do. We have a GoFundMe page. It's called Gophers2, T-O-D-C, and then a hyphen March for Our Lives. Share the link on Facebook, and it's on GoFundMe, and that's how we are raising funds just for transportation for students to go there and back, similar to how they organize charter buses for the Women's March.
Right.
So we really want to raise as much money as possible to send as many students as possible to allow students to have a voice in this discussion, and we just want to be there to support our friends from Parkland in this really difficult but inspiring time moving towards positive change.
So if you've just joined the conversation, James Farnsworth is with us. He's a sophomore at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. He serves in student government there. And as you hear, he's been active for some time on gun policy issues, but he's also helping to raise money for this march, the March for Our Lives in Washington that's happening in March. And if you want to contribute to that, it's Gophers to D.C. at GoFundMe, and then you can find out more information about that. Amy Allison is with us. She's the president of Democracy in Color with us from Berkeley, California. As we have a discussion this morning about what student and millennial activism means today and whether it can succeed when everything else has failed. Now, I asked that question also about the long term, not just the short term. We're seeing a lot of interest. Of course, the media is interested. What happens long term? And I'm wondering if, as you listen into this conversation, if you as a teen or in your 20s have gotten involved in causes, what's the long haul feel like? That's where you really have to dig in and be committed. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR, where Catherine Marie says, "The BP oil spill was my galvanizing moment. Ever since, I've collected issues, skills, platforms, and I'm never stopping." And to Hiba in Morris. Hiba, thanks so much for waiting. Tell me what you're thinking about. Hi.
Well, thank you for having me, Carrie.
Sure.
I'm thinking a lot. So I turned 18 this past September. And I was just outside the cutoff for voting, unfortunately, which really broke my heart because I think that these last 2 years have been huge years of change. I definitely believe that my generation, this generation of millennials and children who are slowly becoming adults, who are becoming mature and rising up through the wake of such a horrible tragedy, I believe that there is a lot of real change that can come from us. We're the future, and I think that a lot of politicians don't necessarily recognize that. I've seen a lot of remarks about how the children who are victims of the shooting, that the people who were friends with victims from the Parkland shooting are taking advantage of the situation to further their careers. And I think that it's a really disgusting mentality to have. I think it's very hurtful. I think it's very poisonous to the cause, which is that we are tomorrow. And we are starting now.
Hib, I want to ask you something that came up really early in the discussion, which is how to use government for change and whether you see the way to make change is around government or through it.
I think it's important to do two things, and that is, first of all, make your voices heard and keep people aware. If you want to make a change, you have to go through government. You really do. I wish that there was a way that we could exist outside of it and still make the changes that we want to make, but it's not rational, it's not logical, but what you can do is inspire other people to listen to what you have to say and to go with your cause and show up to the polls and show up to the caucuses and be prepared to vote on issues that are of importance to you.
Hiba, we're doing an event up at your school in Morris, University of Minnesota, Morris. Do you go there?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. So I hope you'll be there in April.
Absolutely.
I'd love to have your voice as part of that.
Thank you
so much for the call. Amy, what did you hear in what Hiba is saying?
Well, I mean, I just, both Hiba and James, the organizing that's happening in Minnesota in concert with what's going, you know, the Parkland students are doing is amazing. For those of us who are in the older generations, I'm in Generation X, we have a responsibility to put our resources, our time, and to follow the lead of the young people. I think also part of our role is to defend the young people's right to speak, give them space to speak, give them platforms, use whatever we have in order to protect this growing movement. And what was just mentioned about attacking these brave voices, we have a collective responsibility to not allow that to happen. Our politics has disintegrated to the point where people telling the truth, a simple truth, are being attacked and called names. And not only should we not even repeat what that is, but we should be calling the young people who are organizing for Parkland and across the country the heroes that they are. They could actually save our democracy, our country, and bring us back to a moral level. So I wanted to mention that because a lot of us who are older are like, okay, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we do. Go to the GoFundMe page, figure out in our own organizations how we can elevate the leadership of these young people.
Kat says on Twitter, talking about gun policy changes to protect kids, after Sandy Hook, when 95% of Americans supported common sense laws and nothing happened, how can we possibly believe that anything will change? It's always just inspiring talk and no change. James, again, you've been working on these issues for a while, and that's why I'm bringing up the long term, the hard, you know, slog that making change involves. How do you balance that with what's happening right now?
Yeah, I think the person on Twitter makes a great point. I mean, I was in a conversation with someone the other day, and they were saying, once America and once our country decided that the death of kindergartners was okay by not taking any action, that's kind of when we've been on this fast-tracked downward spiral. And I thought that was really gut-wrenching to hear, and even repeating it still gives me goosebumps. So I think, you know, a few different things. I think I'm continuing grassroots organizing. I'm excited that it's certainly not just me. Other students are getting involved in organizing, and not just at the D.C. level, but in Minnesota as well. The March for Our Lives has local and state affiliates, and there's the March for Our Lives here in Minnesota on March 24th at 10 a.m. At the state capitol. Details are still being worked out, but what's really cool with that is that it's a completely youth-led effort. Shout out to Moms Demand Action, who rented the space and reserved the space for youth to gather, but other than reserving the space, they've completely stepped back and let young people take the lead on that event. So I think that's one piece of it. Besides organizing, the other piece is, as we've been discussing, is, of course, action at the legislative level. There's laws in Minnesota, for instance, that have been introduced, like Stand Your Ground and Permitless Carry, which I believe have a really dangerous potential if to be enacted, and would actually work against the positive change we need to be making. On the flip side, there's bills that have been introduced in the legislature that would make us safer from gun violence, such as background checks on every gun sale, closing those loopholes, and then extreme risk protection order, which is also commonly referred to as the red flag law. So I think, of course, organizing goes hand in hand with the legislature, because a lot of times organizing is organizing people who are in support of reducing gun violence to go and take seats at the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that connection. But in terms of, you know, working through the existing political structures we have, there's, you know, laws that are going to go against the direction we need to be going. There's laws that are going to go for the direction we need to be going. So working on getting young people engaged in the existing political process, and being able to, you know, work at it from that established level already, as well as continuing the organizing efforts. So it's kind of, you know, both and that I think that there's a lot of energy and there's a lot of potential for things to be accomplished on both of those sides.
You know, Amy, as I was thinking about this show yesterday, I was thinking about Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords and the moral authority that she brought to this issue of gun laws, because she survived a gunshot to the head by Jared Lee Loeffner in Arizona. He killed six other people. He was posting violent rants, so erratic that his father would disable his car so he couldn't leave the house. He was still able to get a gun legally. And here's how Congresswoman Giffords talks about it. And then what effect has she been able to have? But let's listen to how she phrases this.
Speaking is difficult, but I need to say something important. Violence is a big problem. Too many children are dying. Too many children. We must do something.
Is there anybody who has more moral authority than Congresswoman Giffords? And yet, you see what I'm asking?
Yeah. I think we're in a different moment. I think the tragedy that the congresswoman experienced, the tragedy at Sandy Hook, those five-year-olds couldn't speak out. They couldn't even say what it was like for them, which is a difference with the Parkland students.
That's right.
It's a moment. It's a year into the Trump presidency, where our politics feels so different. Where truth and decency has been kind of spiraling down. That the shock that we have in terms of scandals and Russia and it just goes on and on. There's a feeling in the country where we actually need to do something. And the thing is, it hasn't been just the congresswoman or the babies at the school, the Sandy Hook, that were killed. It's people in the streets every day. And I think more of us are united by the experience of being impacted by violence than not. So I believe that just like very baked in issue in our culture, this gun violence, but it doesn't have to be that way. And I just go back to the times where we've had significant social change that mm-hmm. took, you know, movement and led by young people. I go back to Birmingham. If you look at those black and white reels where, you know, 16-year-olds were being pelted by water hoses and attacked by dogs as part of a very organized moral call to end segregation and end oppression of black people. I just remember how those images inspired people all over the nation, and I believe it could lead to change.
Developing right now in Washington, or actually in National Harbor, Maryland, where the CPAC conference is going on, Wayne LaPierre, the leader of the NRA, is giving a speech, and he is putting responsibility for what happened at the school in Parkland on the FBI, on mental illness, on school security, and he's raising the issue of gun-free zones as a problem for the high school massacre. You'll hear more coverage of what Wayne LaPierre from the NRA said today as well on All Things Considered. To John in Roseville. Hi, John. Thank you so much for waiting. I know you called back, and I'm glad you did because I wanted to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, thanks, Carrie. So the anniversary is approaching, March 5th, 2001. It was a busy year for news. A student walked into Santana High School in East County, San Diego, and shot and killed two people and injured 14 others. I'm 34 now, and had it not been for other events that year, I'm just wondering what could have been done had the nation's priorities hadn't been shifted, because you know it was kind of the forgotten mass shooting after Columbine, mm-hmm. And rightfully so. It's really amazing to see what is now happening, but it's also frustrating because it took so long. And myself, after witnessing that, I became really disillusioned and really just like, okay, this has to change now. This something has to be done. How many more times is this going to happen?
John, were you a student before at the school in San Diego?
Yeah, I was a sophomore at the time.
So you thought some kind of change would happen after that?
Yeah, there really shouldn't have been a question. This was essentially a copycat of Columbine in a way. Inspired by in some form. The student walked in with a handgun, though. He didn't have a rifle, mm-hmm. and he still was able to, take the lives of two people. It's more than just wanting to, ban or control assault rifles. It's really about the lack of mental support and monitoring of these people who can get these guns so easily.
I appreciate the call. Thank you. Amy Allison from Democracy in Color, James Farnsworth with us from the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, where he's a sophomore and he's raising money at the GoFundMe website to send students to Washington for the march in March. Gophers to D.C., if you want a reference point there to contribute to the page. Our conversation continues. I want to ask you about something that's come up from both James and Amy, and we'll open some phone lines here for you. Does this feel different? I mean, are we in a moment where we can acknowledge the paralysis that has gone on for a long time around this issue, but James and Amy believe that something different is happening this time around? And I'd like to hear from you on that, particularly if you've been an activist, if you've committed to causes. Does something, not just gun policy causes, but others, does something feel different this time around? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Larry on Twitter says, high school students were the driving force in getting a landmark climate action plan adopted here in St. Louis Park. Students are moral authority and can succeed in areas where adults have failed in the past. To the phones to Helen in Forest Lake. Helen, thanks so much for waiting. We've had so many calls. I know it took me a while to get to you, but thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. My question is, I think it's great that these kids are looking to external solutions and getting involved, but I'm wondering, as a parent of two high schoolers myself, what are they doing to address the problem internally? Are they including kids that might be marginalized? Are they looking for ways to reach out to those students so that they might not feel that there's no other way to get attention, no other way? It's not just an external solution here. Mm-hmm. I think there's things that can be done within their very small high school community.
James, could you tackle that?
Well, I think that's a great question, and obviously I can't speak on behalf of what's going on in Parkland. I've just been fascinated, reading different news articles about their headquarters that they've set up, their media operation, their organizing operation. But I think you bring up a great point in that hopefully these students are working to include all interested members of their student community in getting involved in making change, because even, with the work we do here in student government every day, the most important thing for us, and I'm assuming for the Parkland students as well, is to make sure that everyone has a voice at the table, and we specifically, seek every day and every initiative, and especially in this situation, it's important to make sure that the voices of marginalized and underrepresented students are included. Sometimes it takes extra outreach, sometimes it takes communicating in a different way, but that's okay, and that's an important part of the process. And hopefully with such an important issue, every student is being engaged, and so far with the absolutely impressive organizing that I've seen by these students, I have no doubt that they are doing that and hopefully continue to do that in their future path legislatively in their local community and any other conversation that they're having with this issue.
Amy, I want to draw on your activist experience here, because a couple days ago we talked with Michelle Gay. Her daughter was killed in Sandy Hook. She went on to form Safe and Sound, a school safety program. I think it is also difficult for her to keep this in front of the politicians' attention and the media attention. So let me draw on your experience and say, how do you do that 3 months from now when the media has certainly moved on, but the cause remains so urgent? How do you keep it in front of people?
I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the moment we're in and the strength of the organizing, like James was pointing to. I mean, any significant social change in this country has a basis in organizing, and the organizing has to be multi-level. So the caller who's a parent, she has a role in keeping this issue alive. People in the communities have a role. Politicians who are opposed to the NRA's influence and who want to carry legislation, there's things that can be done even at the very local level, transportation boards, all the way up to state legislators and congressional seats. So there's organizing at every level. I think, though, this movement is only 8 days old or 9 days old.
Right.
I think it's not going to do everything for everyone. The most important thing is to protect and elevate the voices of the young people who have a very clear message to the rest of the country, is it doesn't have to be this way. We have there's no excuse not to address gun violence, and we demand action. And I think to the extent that we can use our resources to expand and elevate that, that will keep it in the public eye. Because I used to be a teacher, and I was a teacher for 4 years in a school where, you know, if young people try to step out, often adults or the system will try to crush them or silence them. And we're already seeing that happen. We can't let that happen. We have to say this is a defining issue. And we have to connect what the students are doing from Parkland to the Moms Against, you know, Violence, to the Black Lives Matter activists, to all of the activist groups who have been over time trying to connect and change the system of violence that's pervasive in our country. So to the extent that we can do that, it will keep it alive and in front of people as an issue. We won't let if the NRA voices and those talking points get hold and people start repeating, calling the kids names or using whatever they're saying, we have to overwhelm that with the larger issues and not allow that to be the zeitgeist, to be what people are saying it matters most in this country.
Yeah, James, I'll bet you've thought about that, because I know you've seen what's already happened on social media with, oh, these kids are paid opportunists. The NRA chief is saying today that there are opportunists taking advantage of this tragedy. What's your observation about how this is playing out on social media? And then what do you do about it to remain committed?
Yeah, I would say those negative comments about opportunists or crisis actors or any negative references to the kids have been really disappointing. I think, obviously, I have a bias as a student and as a supporter of this, but I think, especially in this time, you know, as young people, we are used to the common downplaying of the voices of young people, especially in important issues like this. So that's extra unfortunate that kind of language. Of course, I haven't seen the exact tape yet because he's currently speaking at CPAC.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that current language is really unfortunate coming from the head of the NRA. And I think in terms of social media, I mean, obviously, these students are using social media as their primary tool.
Right.
For engagement advocacy. It's not like they had an established organization already that was in place and ready to organize this march. I mean, they were really going from the ground up. So I think, you know, for every negative comment, of course, there's going to be negative comments about every issue. I think the overwhelming organization and voice of these students, as far as I can see, is overpowering any of that. Just really unhelpful and unproductive commentary.
Call here from Megan in Robbinsdale. Hi, Megan.
Hello.
Hi. What are you thinking?
I am. The question before was, do I think that this time is different? And I definitely do. I think that Wayne LaPierre is the next Harvey Weinstein. And that this is happening in the wake of Me Too and another sort of baked-in social issue that we thought, you know, we were going to have to keep living with, blaming and attacking the victims, like we're seeing now with this gun issue. And I just think Wayne LaPierre is the next Harvey Weinstein, and we know that we took down those structures that Harvey Weinstein stood for. And we can take down the structures that Wayne LaPierre stands for.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting connection there. And Amy, it sounds like you see it.
Yeah, I really appreciated that comment, because we are in a new type of environment where we're holding people, often powerful men, to account for their actions. For those who have been accepting money from the NRA and who haven't taken responsibility for the result of the policies that make guns so easily accessible, this is holding them to account. So I do think there's more of an opportunity at every level to go off the strength of that and to have a whole new way of judging whether someone's a decent politician or not. Are they for violence or are they against violence? And that is such a basic question that we can use to measure and create energy around holding elected officials accountable, as well as inspiring a whole new group of new leaders to actually put policies in place to address the gun culture. And I can look at I keep talking about Black Lives Matter as a lesson for us. Those brave young people who are calling attention to police violence inspired a group of new DAs and also attorneys, places like Florida and places like Philadelphia, who are a new type of leader, who are doing a completely different set of community-minded policies around criminal justice. So we can look at that and say, a couple years down the line, that's what's possible for the movement.
Well, I think this is something Deirdre wanted to talk about. Is that right, Deirdre? Black Lives Matter?
It is.
Go ahead.
I really appreciate this conversation. And my plan was just to have coffee and listen for a little bit, but I really was tagged the couple of times that you mentioned the students' movement in the civil rights in the 60s. And my heart has been so opened and changed and awakened by Indigenous and Black youth in the last years here in Minneapolis. And I would like to ask, please, when it's possible in a week, in a couple of weeks, please do another show that gives Indigenous and Black people the light that they deserve for the movements that they have been in and that they are still in and that have been suppressed. Because what is happening right now is so many white people with privilege are getting the spotlight, and we have to look at all of the children, at all of the children, and we have to listen to all of them. So I had to call. My voice is shaking because my heart is breaking, not only for those folks in Florida and everyone who's experienced gun violence, but really gun violence is police terror as well. It's also not respecting the sovereign nations. And these are conversations that need to happen if we want to vote in the right people. So as far as protecting and elevating those voices, please, 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 let's not co-opt another movement. Let's really give people that honor.
Deirdre, it means a lot that you were thinking you were just going to listen, and you were galvanized to call, too. So thank you. Thanks for that. James, I wanted to ask you something that's tangential to what Deirdre is bringing up, which is it often feels like, especially with this comparison to Black Lives Matter and the Me Too movement, that our political class is the last to get it, really the last to be held to account. Are we in a time, do you think? I know it's hard to project forward, but I wonder if we're in a time where they just don't have a choice this time around.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think you certainly hit it right on the head in terms of the community and the nation and, you know, everyday people are involved in a movement, and it seems like the politicians are the last to to get on board or even see what's going on. Yes, you're right. It's hard to predict in the future. I think that, this goes back to what I said at the very beginning of this conversation. It's very hard to put into words this feeling that I have, and I think this feeling that I share with others about what, what's different this time. And I guess I would point to the unfortunate fact that when this tragedy happened in Sandy Hook, it was kindergartners and young, really young children who weren't able to speak for themselves.
It was their parents, right, who had to speak.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Right. And I think their parents, like Nicole Hockley and everyone who's involved in the Sandy Hook Promise organization, have incredible stories to tell and do incredible advocacy. But I think this time, because this unspeakable tragedy happened to, a little bit older youth, in high school that have the ability to speak for themselves and have the ability to organize. And you saw it last night. They were face-to-face with Congressman Deutsch, Senator Rubio, and Senator Nelson, and Dana Lash from the NRA, face-to-face in person asking the tough questions. And I don't think I've ever watched a forum that was really that direct and that powerful.
Yeah, agreed. That was about as raw as it gets. You don't see that on TV very often, Amy. I know I have to let you go in a minute, but a last thought here.
Just that it's not just the schools. The movement's bigger. Remember, it's like Orlando in the nightclub or in a church or in a movie theater. It affects all of us. And this is the movement, I think, has the greatest potential right now to fundamentally change our experience and our safety as Americans. And we can do it.
Amy, I really appreciate the insight and the clarity that you bring to these discussions. Thank you. Thanks for being available to us today.
Thank you.
Amy Allison is the president of Democracy in Color with us today from Berkeley, California. Let me grab another call here for James to Julie in Apple Valley. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I just want to say that you're asking what's different this time.
Yeah.
Sandy Hook, yes, was the babies. We killed babies in Sandy Hook. Now we're killing children in Florida. The difference is that it's children that are standing up to face, the government people and so forth and so on to make some changes. That, to me, is the biggest difference. It should be so embarrassing to every American that we have to have our children stand up, take a stand the way they are for us, for our speaking, to make some changes or to try to hope to change. This isn't rocket science. Look at any other country and how they control their shootings and their gun controls. This is all about money. That's what it's about.
Julie, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening in today. James, are you, as you raise money at GoFundMe, and by the way, again, it's Gophers to D.C., are you planning to go to Washington or are you going to help run the march here in late March?
Yeah, I'm kind of involved in both, actually. So I have connections with Moms Demand Action and people here. I'm trying to connect youth with Moms Demand Action to organize the rally here in Minnesota. That's, again, at the state capitol on March 24th at 10 a.m. And then I'm also involved in, working with University of Minnesota students to send them to Washington, because I think both are important. Obviously, people have different capacities and different scheduling issues, and I'm even at this point working on a schedule conflict that I have on that date. But I think this organizing is too important to, not seize the moment. So we're working on both, and if anyone has any resources or any tips or advice they want to share, we do have an email address as well. That's gophers2dc@gmail.com. That's on the bottom of the GoFundMe as well.
Good work, James. Thanks very much.
Thank you
to have
so
you
much
on the show.